ready for the interview. In a few, get a cue live on a laptop. Watch what I'm gonna do. Welcome to the show. Let them know we got a point of view. Hey, yo, let's have a combo. Say what you feel, be real. That's the motto. Real talk, pronto. Dr. D, PhD, hit an intro. Hold up, wait. Gotta be social, network, global, a home for the locals. Gotta be social, network, global, a home for the locals.
Please check out a few of my affiliates and sponsors. It's the best way to support the podcast outside of listening to it.
Are you ready get to ready feel for more an energized? Episode
focused and supported? Go to layeredsuperfood.com and add nourishing plant-based foods to fuel you from sunrise to sunset. Use our promo code Dr. D at checkout to save 15% off your dog on the Nom Nom food plan. My dog Aries is definitely on the Nom Nom food plan. He loves it when I get a Nom Nom package out the fridge. In fact, it's funny to watch him because his eyes light up. He gets really serious, like straight like an arrow. He literally loves his food. It makes me laugh. Nom Nom's food is full of fresh proteins your dog loves, the vitamins and nutrients they need to thrive. You can actually see proteins in vegetables, beef, chicken, pork, peas, carrots, kale, and more. You just tell them about your pup, age, breed, weight, allergies, protein preferences. They'll tailor a specific amount of individually packaged Nom Nom meals, send them straight to you, store the meals in the freezer till it's mealtime. And they'll give you specific instructions on how to transition your dog from foods like kibble to always fresh Nom Nom. So isn't it time to feel good about the food you're feeding your dog? Order Nom Nom today. Go to the referral link, which is in the show notes, and get 50% off your first order plus free shipping. Nom Nom comes with a money back guarantee. That means if your dog doesn't love fresh, delicious meals, Nom Nom will refund your first order. No fillers, no nonsense, just Nom Nom. All right, we're back again. Dr. D's Social Network podcast. And I've been feeling like doing a lot of these solo podcasts and trying to focus it, at least initially, on a lot of fitness based stuff and then going on from there. So today, in the beginning, I wanted to focus on kind of our health and wellness research. And kind of the tagline, if you will, is we're kind of saying the same thing with health and fitness research and wellness research, and it's really not making a difference. So what I mean by that is there are plenty of white papers out there, plenty of research articles that tell you pretty much a similar thing. If you are physically active, work out, exercise, be physically active, move regularly, it's better for you, right? This is just giving you kind of the layman's terminology. We don't have to dive too deep into this. Generally, most people know that being physically active is good for them. And research into this tells you the exact same thing. We also have a lot of research that's telling us, well, you know, if you just did this many times a week for this many minutes, you would increase your life expectancy. You would have less chronic conditions, orthopedic issues, all this. I think it's fair to say most people know that. It's not that people don't know that things like exercise, physical activity, and movement are good for them. I mean, if you went around and just went on the street and asked people randomly, is being physically active good for you? It would be very difficult to find someone who said it wasn't. I mean, this doesn't matter where you come from. It's a pretty well-known deal that this stuff is really good for you. You don't have to have all the science, all the information to know that. But the general population knows that if I did more of this, whether it's activity, exercise, movement, that I would improve my quality of life, potentially have a longer existence, and have less chronic conditions, orthopedic issues, things of that nature. The majority of humans are on board with that. The problem is people can be on board with something and then not do it. I mean, this happens all the time. I mean, if you're a parent, your children could say, yes, I know this. And whatever it is, I know I should take out the trash. I know I should not act this way. I know I should do that. And then they do it the opposite of that. Most people know the things they're supposed to do. It doesn't mean it moves the needle for them to do it. And this is kind of my bone to pick, if you will, with fitness, health, and wellness research is essentially saying the same thing when it comes to outcomes related to you will be better, feel better, mentally health better, all these things. We inherently know this. It's not that we don't know it. The gap that we're missing is how do we get people from the point of knowing to doing, and having more and more research related to that you'll feel better and do this, I don't personally believe is actually helping the cause at all for that. So as many of my colleagues have said, and we've talked about, and this is kind of a big part of my presentation experience as of late and conferences, is you know, we don't need all this extra research about the value of exercise, physical activity, and movement. We need a different type of research that's more relatable to actually getting people to facilitate them to actually do that. As most people know in the business, the penetration rate's about 20%. And honestly, that is a really generous number. It's probably a lot closer to 10% of people who are meeting guidelines for being active regularly for that. So there's a lot of factors that go into that. And I talk about that a lot, especially with the presentations I do. I'll talk about a lot of the biological and anthropological research related to that, which I think is one of the more effective reasons of why people don't exercise or be physically active or move regularly. I think in our business, we skip that completely. We just completely skip that. And we tell a story that's just not the reality of things. We want to blame it on the influencers and different things of that nature. And I certainly have different opinions on that. And I think we're going about that whole thing in a very wrong way of like attacking influencers. And just because someone has a different way of doing things, and obviously there's a lot of misinformation with that, it's better to me to meet the influencers, talk to them, meet with them, get an idea of what they're thinking, so we can kind of bridge that gap. That's kind of my whole thing, is bridging the gap. We're doing a really poor job of bridging the gap. So the big gap, the big chasm in the United States and growing beyond that is we have a serious issue with poor health. We have a very serious issue with poor health for very long periods of time, and not just in America, but actually really spreading to all parts of the world, especially as technology becomes more prevalent with that. We're just not doing a great job getting people to actually be participants in their own health and wellness for that. And that's, you know, a large part of that's our fault. It's, you know, the messaging, the messengers, the marketing, the whole thing. With that. But I can tell you this, we don't necessarily need more people saying that if you did this or that, 100,000 less people would die per year. The truth of that, and honestly, we have to be more honest with this and not have the self-deception. The truth of that is no one cares about those statistics. The people who do the research care about the statistics, but the people on the ground living everyday lives, they're not paying attention to that. They're not concerned with this will save this many more people's lives if more people were working out for that. I'm not saying these are bad things to think about and that they're not truthful. These are great, larger ideas. And listen, I'm compassionate towards that, but I'm also very logical and realistic in that this message is not getting through to change the large scale. We're not scaling up the behavior change for this. And it's been one of my objectives is trying to figure out a way how to infiltrate different areas to kind of help with this, because it's one thing to talk about it. It's another thing to do it. And I don't want to be a hypocrite and talk about it and then actually do nothing about it. And so that's part of my work in trying to get back into actually working, getting back into teaching and university level, working with programs to try to overhaul curriculums. Presentations primarily focused on what we need to do to bridge these gaps to get better, and not just with someone that just talks about it for that. So we're talking about a lot of stuff. People are doing a lot of research, but it's all research. It's just saying the same thing, and the public's not connecting with it, and that's a problem for that. Again, I'm not trying to diss anyone doing these research studies. I think research is really important. Science is important. But you also have to look at what's the penetration level of the information you're putting out. You're putting out for yourself for different reasons. You may be passionate about it, but are you doing this research and understanding how it's actually affecting people who are actually working in the industry? or that. So another thing I think that this addresses in addition with this is I would like to see more researchers be practitioners in the business. And I recently had a conversation with a colleague about this is my, and maybe this has really changed a lot in formal education settings, but my experience and what I have seen is a lot of researchers are actually not practitioners. But this is also kind of speaking to the thing, what happens with people in the fitness business, especially where a lot of people, their entry point is in, as a personal trainer. And they become a personal trainer, they do it, and it's a very difficult profession to be in for a long time. I've been very fortunate to be in for over two decades and having a successful business doing it, but it's very hard. And that, and our industry has not done us any favors to help that be a better profession to be in for a long time. But what happens is often the practitioner becomes the manager, and the manager wants to, you know, becomes the executive. And then what happens is that person starts dwindling down their connection to the entry level point, which for a lot of people is Group X and personal training. And then they become an executive and go further, further, higher. And then they lose their connection to actual what's happening between clients and trainers and the ground level. For me, I've always thought it was important to stay a trainer, always. Even when I was started out as a trainer and I had ambitions to move up to become a manager, a GM, and then a corporate executive, which I did. I was adamant about staying a trainer during that time, and not just training a little, training a lot. So that I would always sharpen that skill and continue to have a very relevant connection to training people on a regular basis. It's one thing to talk about training and conferences and things of that nature, and you haven't trained anybody in like 20 years, 10, 15 years. Again, I'm not dissing people for that, but I think this is kind of what happens with our industry too, is we have so many people trying not to be trainers for a long time and trying to move up into more executive roles. They often forget what it's like to be in the practice. And that's not saying that you should, you know, do full-time training constantly while you're an executive. It's very difficult. There's a time element to that, but keeping that sharp, I think, is important. And often linking this back to the educational aspect, a lot of educators, professors, and universities are not practitioners. All right, so they may be talking to students and they're not making the training profession attractive either because they're not doing it. And they're not talking about how it can be a rewarding career. A lot of times people are getting pushed into DPT programs. They're getting pushed exercise physiology. Again, disclaimer, these are good jobs to have. But so is personal training. And less students are going into university settings and things wanting to be a trainer. Obviously, because you don't have to go to have a formal education in a university setting to be a trainer. But honestly, I think it really helps. And there's another whole conversation about the cost of college, which is horrendous and is unacceptable. I can go on another rant about that. I won't, but that's certainly a very large factor. We got to do something about that. But we have a gap. Another part of the gap is that we have a lot of educators who are not practitioners or formerly practitioners. And the further you get away from being a practitioner, the less you really have a connection to what's actually happening on the ground. I never wanted to lose that. Think about it this way. You grow up with someone, right? You're very close to them. And then through the course of life, your pathways start going different ways. The branches of life start going different ways. And you don't talk to each other that much. You don't spend that much time with each other. You're once very close, right? And then all of a sudden, 5-10 years go by and you really haven't spent any time with that person. At that point, you really don't know what's going on in their lives. You have no real sense of their daily living, the different things they're going through, their joys, their pains, all of that. It's a very similar thing when the practitioner becomes an executive. It becomes kind of a long lost friend and you start losing track of what it's like. So I'm a big proponent of the practitioner and the educator having doing both of those things, even if it's on a smaller basis. I want to see more PhDs, educators, and collegiate places actually training people on a regular basis. Again, doesn't have to be a ton, but you got sharpening that sword regularly. And I know people, training burns them out. And they just, they just see it as like, wow, this is very difficult to do. I totally sympathize with that. But I think that's one of the things we're missing. We need to have a little bit more integration with that. So our next thing here is I want to talk about accepting your strengths. And this kind of goes into what I just talked about, that with the bridging the gap. And one of the things, I had a great conversation with a colleague of mine in Las Vegas, and we've known each other for a really long time. And this person has been, you know, very high level executive in Las Vegas in a different industry. And myself, I've been in the executive world, corporate executive, all the meetings, the crazy long meetings, very boring, not a lot happening. And it sounds great. You know, you're doing these things and you're making good money. But what if that's not necessarily your strength, the thing you really are really good at? It's really interesting. It's sometimes we rebel against our strengths. We don't accept our strengths as that's what we should do. And that's really where we should be at. I think one of the things for me is it took me a long time to not have shame about being a lifelong personal trainer. Because honestly, the industry just gets bashed all the time. Oh, you're a trainer. What did you learn? How to do jumping jacks? Obviously, the lack of regulation, the very poor standards. It delegitimizes the business all the time. So I had a lot of shame about that, that I have all this education and I'm training people all the time for that. And honestly, it's been a strength. From the first day that I trained a human being, it felt natural for me. It's been a strength of mine. And I felt like for a long time, I tried to run away from it. But being a lifelong trainer and full-time for all this the majority of this time I've done it, there's no shame in that. You know, I accept that strength that's I'm good at, you know, for that. And I think there's actually a lot of people like myself, and I've hired a ton of trainers, and I try to be honest with them, you know, like, hey, this is what you're really good at. And everybody wants to go into management because they want the paycheck. They want steady pay. I don't blame them for that. It's difficult to have a steady paycheck as a trainer. You don't know when you're getting paid, sometimes depending on, you know, when people finish their sessions, the whole deal, blah, blah, blah. Again, another whole thing. The desire to have that steady paycheck is a really desirable, enticing thing. But often, what I see all the time, a lot of trainers are not great managers, you know, and we do this all the time. There's tremendous research with Gallup about this, is that hiring within is not always the best thing. Just because someone's great at one job doesn't mean they'll be great at another. There's a tremendous amount of information about this, easily looked up for that. But we always do this. We always, hey, this person was great at this job, so they'll be great at that job. That just does not equate all the time. And it's very difficult sometimes to accept your strengths. And because sometimes what your strength is not something that society values. Let me say that again. Sometimes what your strength is not something what society values for that. In this case, oftentimes other professionals don't value the entry point. You know, listen, you may be great with your hands, and maybe you're good at woodworking, and you're good with fixing things, right? But maybe in your mind, you think, I should be doing more than this with my life. Who told you that? Maybe that's your entry point and your end point. And that's not a bad thing for that. Don't let someone tell you that your strength is not a value. It's a value to society. More than anything, it's a value to yourself and your family with that as well. So accept your strengths. I always talk about this with my daughter, with my wife. We have very amazing conversations. My wife is an incredible caretaker, and she struggled with accepting that. And if you were sick, you would want my wife to take care of you. I mean, she's the greatest caretaker on the planet. It is literally the most natural thing in her life. Watching her go into action and caretaking, incredible, right? Well, she has had trouble accepting that over time. And we've been working through that. And as I said, with myself as a trainer, I've had trouble accepting that over two decades that, you know, it can be difficult to be like, hey, you know, I'm just a trainer. I'm not just a trainer. It's something I love doing. I'm really good at it. And it's something that I have really worked hard to embrace. And I feel like I'm at a really good point where I feel really great about it. Listen, I've done all the executive work. I've run a club before. I've helped to plan clubs, consult, all those things. And that's a great thing to do. Those are great jobs to do. I enjoy that. But I really had to be honest with myself. And while I enjoy doing that stuff still on a part-time basis, I'm a trainer. I enjoy that. I accept my strength. And my strength is one-on-one connected with people for that. So accepting your strength is something that I think it's really important for all of us to work on. And I'll be the first to admit it's been a difficult thing for me for doing that. So accept your strengths and realize it's a process of accepting that strength, because don't let anyone tell you that your strength is not valued in society, or that because your strength may be an entry level point in terms of work, that's not valuable. I mean, you need to be at that point. Not everyone is going to be the startup CEO of a tech company, right? Or someone's going to be an engineer or doctor or lawyer, whatever it is. We'd always tell people to strive for these things, but what if it's not what they should be doing? And parents, and speaking out here, you know what your child's strengths are, and you know it early. As a parent myself, it is very clear what your child's strengths are early, and they keep on manifesting that. They keep on promoting that as they get older. You see it in them. Don't kill that in them. Encourage them. Encourage their strengths. Don't let them feel bad about it. It's really important to not let them feel bad about that. Okay, our last segment here. We're getting into the summertime here and want to do a little update on some things coming up with the podcast here. So last thing, with the podcast, going on 600. Oh, I think we're in the 630s at this point. And slow down a little bit on my pace of podcasting, less guests, because we're moving to Colorado from Washington State. And we are arriving in Colorado in a few weeks, Windsor, Colorado, near Fort Collins. I'm really excited about the opportunity. And I have plans for hopefully some in-person, for the first time in-person podcasting, to give a different vantage point of that. Some plans for a monthly show. Spinoff. I do a lot of spinoffs. I like doing that with a colleague of mine where we discuss healthcare and really break down the healthcare system for that. So we're looking forward to that as well with a colleague of mine. I'm excited to launch that. And then I always have regular spinoff with Simon Milliman, which has got Arbiters of Bad Taste every 2 weeks, where we discuss generally 80s movies. And how we relate those 80s movies to our lives. That's one of my favorite things of all time to do in podcasting, because I get to podcast with one of my best friends and I really enjoy that relationship. So booking guests regularly again, going to start filling up that queue with more very interesting conversations. But I think you can expect more of these where I give my some takes about the fitness industry, things we could do better. And get ready for some big things coming up as well. I'll keep that to myself. They'll be announcing some things. But the biggest thing coming up right now is, moving to Colorado, a new opportunity to network with people and connect with colleagues. And so in the final part here, just want to leave you again with networking is really important, or whatever you want to call it, connecting with colleagues, creating connections. One of the first things I do when I move, I've moved quite a bit in my life, but it's a new opportunity to meet people. So I'm scheduling meetings with as many of my fitness, health, and wellness colleagues in Colorado when I arrive, meet in person, create that synergy, and see how we can be supportive and encouraging of each other. So there's lots of great ways to do that online. LinkedIn is usually my favorite way to get that stuff done. You may have many different ways that you do that, but I would encourage you to go out there and meet your colleagues. Do not live in a silo. If anything about current society has taught you anything, we need to get out of that. In fitness, we've done a pretty bad job of that too. We do not encourage cross-collaboration, interdisciplinary, studies and things like that. But, you know, it's not that hard to reach out and say hello. And I get it. I know, especially on like a LinkedIn, a lot of messaging that happens behind the scenes is selling people things. It drives me crazy too, guys. Believe me, I used to be someone who would like, I'm going to get back to every single person that messages me about anything. It could be, you know, trying to get me to a business thing and just politely say no. I'm at the point I'm getting so many, I just don't reply. So that's not something I like to do. But listen, if you're listening to this and you want to reach out to me because you have some great business idea, honestly, I'm not going to respond to it. One, I may be into it later on if you come at me as a human being and not a business opportunity for that. I'm on there to meet people, develop good collegial relationships, and then we can discuss other things beyond that. So that's where I'm at with that. So my goal over the past 14, 15 years, I've had conversations with somebody in my business at least once or twice a week, sometimes five, six, seven times, depending on the week. Meet other people. Do not get caught in the game of only connecting with people at your gym, at your facility, in your state, in your community. Reach out to people who are not close to you. Build your connections. Build your connections authentically. Meet with people. Talk to them. Spend time with them. Look them in the eye. Develop trust, connection. The more you do that, the more resources you're going to have in your life. And podcasts are a great way to do that. That's why I love doing mine. Again, we have a lot of stuff coming up on Dr. D's Social Network podcast. But I'm going to sign off for now. Thank you guys so much for connecting and checking in with what I'm up to. And I will check in with you next time. Thanks a lot.